Hey guys, just before the episode starts, we thought we'd jump on in here with a little goddamn freaking ad for you all.
This is news, baby. We have started a brand new Patreon, patreon.com/totalreboot. If you sign up to our Patreon for just $5 a month, you will gain access to our bonus content known as
Total Reboot Riffs, where we're going to be rebooting films that exist out there in the world, but putting our own little frickin' spin on them.
That's right, babies. We're going to be pitching our reboots to movies that already exist, but we're going to make them a little bit better.
We're also going to be doing some commentaries.
Yes.
That go over original tracks, so you can sync them up. You can sit at home, pop on Reservoir Dogs or some shit like that, and listen to us talk over it.
Right now, you have access to at least one episode, which I think is very, very funny. People have been loving it so far. They have already signed up to the Patreon. Mm-hmm. It is our reboot of American Pie.
Alexi style.
It's based on my life as a teenager now.
And it's weirdly hornier and yet more woke at the same time.
Far more woke than the original. And still we're getting some commentaries up there for you. And one of them we've been talking about doing, we plan to do a Mike Myers horny box set of commentaries.
That's right. Every single Mike Myers movie.
We just committed to it now. We are going to do them.
No, we'll just do the Austin Powers ones.
For now. But yeah. Then we shall do every single other Mike Myers movie on there, bar Pete's Meteor.
We have to do Pete's Meteor. Okay. We got to do all of them.
So join up to patreon.com/totalreboot. $5 will get you everything for the hornier level. For horny babies, that's $6.90. $6.90.
That sounds familiar to something.
$6.90.
It makes me feel hungry for, I don't know, dinner for two or something.
I could eat for two, that's for sure. That is going to get you nothing extra.
It's the exact same thing, but it's just a little bit hornier.
Yeah, so it's the one to go for, baby.
And maybe we'll shout you out on the podcast.
Maybe we will. We will shout you out. So join us over at patreon.com/totalreboot. Enjoy the show.
Have fun with it, be yourself.
Okay, hello.
Yeah, I reckon just chill out, relax.
I'll give it a shot.
Max on cool.
I'm maxing. Right now, I'm maxing.
Any second now, we're going to start this podcast.
Yeah, we'll start it.
Hello. Are these on?
Yeah, we're rolling right now.
Yeah. We're burning tape right now.
Okay,
guys.
Let's start it. Okay. Just start when you're ready. Just whenever you're ready, just kick it off.
If you're having fun with it, then you'll be having fun with it.
Yeah.
Just be yourself.
Yeah.
Have you had a guest and try it?
No, it's too
soon.
No,
we can't.
Too soon.
Yep,
it's
yep,
too
yep,
much.
Yep, yep. Let's just start it, Lex. Here we go. Oh, all right, go.
No.
Do you have any questions, Guy, before we kick things off?
I guess I'll just freeform it. Just have fun with it.
Okay.
Okay.
You can swear on this too.
Great.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
All right, go, Lex.
You're allowed to say whatever you want as long as it pertains to the film. There shall be no riffing of any kind whatsoever outside of the film. Hello, totalitarians. Hello, reboot rats. And welcome to another episode of Total Reboot, the only podcast about film, cinema, movies on the internet, available for download via iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. My name is Alexi Toliopoulos, and with me, as always, is Cameron James.
And it is a thrill for me to be here on the podcast that goes through the reboots, remakes, and rip-offs of cinema.
What? But you really put a little stank on that one,
yeah,
Cameron.
Yeah, I put a little stank on it that time. Speaking of stank, our guest today does not stank. This guy smells fresh and clean.
The only thing I stank of is dank. Am I right, fellas?
He loves dank memes. He loves the internet. It's Guy Montgomery, everybody.
So good to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you among us.
Oh.
Our fans will be delighted to get to know you a little bit, I'm sure.
And today we've got Guy on the pod to talk to us about a very special reboot, remake, or ripoff. Why don't you tell us what... Tell the audience, give a little tease as to what this little episode's all about.
Well, today we shall be discussing The Flintstones, the film from 1994, directed by Brian Levant. We're going to be doing, every now and then, we're going to be checking in on TV shows that have been rebooted or remade into movies. And we're going to start with The Flintstones.
The greatest one of them all.
Perhaps we have not checked out the other ones yet. So far, it is the greatest of the bunch.
It is. The Flintstones, 1994, the year Kurt Cobain died, tragically.
Was that related at all?
Not verified, but probably, yes.
He probably would have loved to have seen this movie.
You're a big Nirvana hit. I love Nirvana. You love it. You were playing quite loudly on your headphones when you came in. You were playing Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yeah. I walked in blaring it in my earbuds.
So cool to see, man. So cool. Yeah. And you were saying Kurt Cobain, because you're a big Cobain head.
I love Cobain, man. I've got the journals.
Yeah. You're saying he's a big cartoon fan.
Loves cartoons, man. He's obsessed with cartoons.
God, could you imagine if Kurt Cobain had a cameo in The Flintstones?
I imagine if Kurt Cobain had a cameo in The Simpsons.
I mean, he would be quite yellow.
Yeah, it would be so cool. Because, you know, he had Smashing Pumpkins in there. So imagine if Kurt Cobain was in there.
God, what would he have been like?
Probably very sarcastic.
Yeah, probably quite rude to Homer. The guy did not suffer fools, I tell you that. It's about Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, are you a big Nirvana guy?
Oh, you've just put me onto it, man.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I'm going to listen to all their albums.
Because I walked in blaring Nirvana, but you were blaring in your own headphones the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, Chili's. Big Chili's guy. I love the Chili's. Have you guys read Anthony Kiedis' autobiography, Scar Tissue?
Honestly, couldn't put it down.
Yeah, I couldn't either. So sick. Do you know he lost his virginity to his dad's girl? So sick.
It's pretty wild stuff. Imagine to be a rock star, what it would be like.
Legend status. Yeah.
Scar Tissue was the first porno I ever owned. Because there's topless photos of his girlfriends middle of the book.
Little centerfold action.
Terrible.
Such a legend. Such a legend of rock.
Living legend.
Well, talking about rock legends, why don't we go back to the original rock legends? The prehistoric modern Stone Age family themselves. The Flintstones. And the Rubbles, their next door neighbors / best friends.
You know, Flag, I thought this was later than 1994.
It feels like late 90s.
Oh, it feels like a modern movie. Could be made yesterday, if you ask me.
It could have been made yesterday. It's a testament to the production values. I mean, no expense has been spared on this beautiful set.
I love it. It looks gorgeous.
Yeah. Mm. And that's what we'd say, or I'd say certainly during the film, you guys would get quite frustrated. So I'd love to walk around there. I'd love to walk around in there.
I've said it multiple times, and I agree with you the first time, but you didn't need to keep saying it.
Yeah, but how fun would it be to just get in there and walk around?
Yeah. Do you think this would be better as a free world live-in experience rather than a movie?
If this was a Westworld where you could go back and fuck a dinosaur and hunt a prehistoric man, if that's what you were into.
I think it would, but this would be this the whole time you're watching it's like this would be so much better experienced immersively than the version of a movie.
God, I'd love Flintstones VR.
Yes.
That would be fabulous.
Hey, why don't you read us a little bit about what this movie's about?
All right, here's a little flavor of what this Flintstones is truly like.
Wilma, I'm home! This summer, from Universal Pictures and Amblin Entertainment,
modern Stone Age family, the Flintstones, hit the big screen in this live-action version of the classic cartoon. Fred helps Barney adopt a child. Barney sees an opportunity to repay him when Slate Mining tests its employees to find a new executive. but no good deed goes unpunished.
Even in that very short blurb, I became bored by what happens in the movie. It was like everything's sort of coming along quite nicely. It's like Slate Mining needs a new executive and just the bottom falls out.
I mean, it's funny stuff. We can all enjoy this lovely family childhood classic. That's, I think, the most bizarre thing about this film is that, like we were saying, it looks amazing. I think, in my opinion...
I'd like to walk around in there.
I'd love to walk a mile in, well, I guess their lack of shoes rather than their actual shoes.
Someone call the fire department because we are cooking in here.
Yeah, this is cooking, man.
I think that, like, this movie, truly, it's one of my favorite looking films of all time. I think it's got the best production design maybe of any movie. I would love to take a stroll around the neighborhood of Bedrock. If I could, I think that would be the best way, perhaps, to experience this wonderful film.
Fuck a dinosaur.
Yeah, fuck a dinosaur, hook up with Liz Taylor, whatever's going on.
Do you know who would have straight up fucked the most dinosaurs? Anthony Kiedis, living legend, lead singer of the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
He would have got a blowjob from a freaking Brachiosaurus. Imagine that, guys, if you will.
God, I'd love to just have a sit back and think about it.
Why don't we all just take a moment now
to imagine Anthony Kiedis, front man of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, author of Scar Tissue. Yeah.
Living legend.
Getting sucked up by a Brachiosaurus. And if you're not familiar, Brachiosaurus is one of the dinosaurs with the longest necks in history.
That's some serious deep throat.
Because you know his dick going to go all the way down.
A yabba dabba doo, brother.
That sounds like Red Hot Chili Pepper lyrics, actually.
Oh, man, what a cool image. I'm so glad we thought of it.
Yeah, well, it's not inappropriate for this film, because while this movie does seem like it should be a children's funny little comedy, there's probably, like, not that many jokes, and it's mainly a movie about corporate espionage, embezzlement, fraud, marital problems, mother-in-laws, and the strife of adoption.
There's some... Oh, God, there's so much wrong with this movie for a kid's movie. We mentioned it a few times during the viewing, but we need to mention it on the record here. Who is this movie for? Who's it for? Is it for children?
Horny,
or is it for...
Horny dads.
I think it's for horny dads taking their kids. They get to see Halle Berry playing Sharon Stone.
Yeah. Every time Halle Berry walks on screen, it's like... Ba-doing!
Yeah, you go...
Yeah,
there's some serious horniness.
She's
going on.
Honestly the sexiest woman alive, and that's official.
And this movie makes no attempt to hide that.
Not even a little bit.
No, she's wearing a two-piece. Everyone else in this movie is wearing a onesie,
a smock, if you will.
Yeah, she, like a shapeless pillowcase. She's wearing a freaking bikini the whole time, and she's lounging around in that thing. And the camera like utilizes the male gaze every time she comes on. It like starts at her feet and pans up her entire
tilts
body, lingering on her various female body parts.
Sorry, I can't keep up because I'm still imagining a pan up her body, which seems completely against the actual term.
No, you're 100% right. Pans are horizontal, tilts are vertical.
But surely if she were to be lying down, there would be a pan across her entire body.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. The camera loves her.
And she is so horny in this film for John Goodman's friend, Fred Flintstone. And, I mean, rest assured, it's pretty easy to see why. There's something in it for the mums as well, because old Johnny Goodman has got some very good arms, man.
Oh, my God. Oh my gosh. He should be a professional reviewer writing reviews like
this. He has
some
insane guns. When you think of John Goodman, I think, all right, this guy's maybe a bit blubby.
You think of him as a giant beef.
But he
not unlike the saddle of meat that goes on top of the Flintstones mobile.
He's gorgeous. He's got a great head of hair. He's oozing with charisma, and those arms are fucking chiseled as.
Oh my
gosh. The guy's great.
He is a very good bit of casting. In fact, as soon as I saw John Goodman's Fred Flintstone and Rick Moranis' Barney Rubble side by side in the footmobile, I said, that's a good bit of casting right there. That's what I said.
Inspired casting, I'd say.
Well, it actually is inspired. Truly it is. When Steven Spielberg met John Goodman for the first time on the set of the floptastic film always. He said, one day I will make you Fred Flintstone. And that was a promise. But I think to John Goodman, it felt more like a threat. Because I watched an interview with John Goodman this morning about him as one of the, as his experience starring as Fred Flintstone. And he said, this was taped live on the set. And he was saying that he's like, yeah, I'm kind of nervous about it because I worry that the rest of my life people would be yelling yabba dabba do at me. And he didn't sound like he was enjoying it very much. He said he hated the haircut that he had to have as Fred Flintstone. Can't imagine why. It's a beautiful head of hair.
He looks great. What do you think of Rick Moranis as his best friend, Barney Rubble?
I thought he was very good.
Rick's incredible.
I thought he embodied the character of Barney Rubble. The issue is not the performance; it's in what they're given to do.
Mm. Yeah,
as actors and characters,
mm.
There's only so much fun you can. I mean, they just hang shit on Barney this whole movie.
Yeah,
and not even in an amusing or fun way, but it's just like you are subsidiary to the plot of Fred battling through this.
It's like Barney is a regular Job from the Bible being tested. Everything that could go wrong does go wrong to Barney, but he doesn't really get any character growth beyond it. He just gets to be frustrated and sad that his life isn't going well.
You very accurately pointed out, Alexi, that there are a few moments of friendship, camaraderie between Barney and Fred that you think they're meant to be tearjerkers.
I think there's more tearjerking scenes in this film than any laugh moments. Like, there's no like big comedic set pieces in this apart from you get to see Fred Flintstone go bowling or have a shower with a mammoth squirting spit all over
you're
him.
You're right.
And
all
stuff.
The comedy scenes are just things we've seen in the cartoons, but now they're real.
That is exactly true.
That's all the jokes are. Look, you remember this? This is it again, but now it's real.
And there's like a few little jokes, but they're all just like, hey, what if the B-52s were called the BC-52s?
Which is funny stuff.
I mean, I pissed my pants laughing.
You did?
It was out of control. I was like, sorry, fellas. I need to piss, but I need to keep watching this. I apologize. You're going to get a low ranking on your Airbnb guide, but this is piss funny.
That was piss funny. Also, Elizabeth Taylor, formerly the sexiest woman
alive.
Sexiest woman in prehistory, perhaps.
Very good. She had a good laugh line for me, which was the sacrifice line. It was like sacrifice lamb, oxen, his
your brother.
Yeah, your brother. And that was one of two moments I registered where I was like, they've written a joke there.
Because
this was written by a crack squad of writers from like Night Court.
Night Court, Happy Days, a bunch of Mork and Mindy. So they got a bunch of writers.
What do you mean by like how many writers? Like a writer's room, like a TV show.
Like a sitcom.
They're not credited writers. They did Punch Up or something.
Yeah, they got Brian Levant's got 20 writers to come write the screenplay for this film.
Great idea.
That's crazy.
This is an instance of the director maybe loving the original, like loving it too much.
Brian Levant is probably the world's biggest Flintstones fan ever.
Fuck, that must sting the man now.
There is photos of his house that is just covered in Flintstones memorabilia.
Why? Maybe we should delve back into the cartoon a little bit here. Did either of you watch the cartoon, the Flintstones?
It's peripheral to my childhood viewing habits, but it was pretty ubiquitous. I'm familiar with the concepts in it and like.
Well, then who's Dino?
Dino's the dinosaur, the pet dog.
Correct. It checks out.
Yeah,
the guy's a fan.
What sort of cartoons did you grow up watching?
No, I was a Nickelodeon guy.
Oh, right.
So I was Our Real Monsters, Rocko's Modern Life, Hey Arnold, Cat Dog.
Yeah,
I got also those Angry Beavers. Cow vs. Chicken.
Yeah,
I Am Weasel. Fuck, those were some good times back then.
That was some great
Dexter's
shit.
Laboratory.
Yeah. Oh my gosh! Now you speak my language.
Fairly Odd Parents.
Fairly Odd Parents is still funny.
It's great. There's some great stuff coming out of that studio. Even the live action stuff. Amanda Bynes.
The Amanda Show.
That was seminal.
Kenan and Kel.
All that.
That's So Raven. I think that was Nickelodeon.
That was Nickelodeon. Oh, that was Disney, I believe.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
Wizards of Waverly Place.
That's Disney.
The Jonas Brothers.
Oh, the Jonases. Yeah, of course. I love that show. I was a big Kenan and Kel fan. And I love Rocco is probably my favorite.
Kenan
cartoon.
And Kel is one of the first shows I remember like racing home from school to catch it on TV and just watching it by myself and just laughing.
God, I loved it.
So
I never would have predicted in a million years that Kenan would be the breakout star.
Yeah. I had this conversation that because Kel got all the big
like riotous laughter.
And now Kenan's the longest serving cast member of SNL.
Isn't that insane?
It's insane. He's been on the show for nearly six decades.
He was one of the original Not Ready for Primetime players.
But were you a Flintstones fanatic?
I mean, I reckon I would have watched it in the same way that I would have watched Scooby-Doo, which is rarely, but I probably still know all the tropes of it and I know all the characters and stuff. I think that was more of a Saturday morning cartoons, the Hanna-Barbera stuff.
I was a bit of a Hanna-Barbera fan when I was a kid. I loved it.
Really?
I love Flintstones, Scooby-Doo, Secret Squirrel, all of that kind of shit.
What was the Wacky Races, that one?
Wacky Races.
I love Wacky Races. Yeah, Wacky Races. I actually watched some of that on YouTube recently.
Did it hold up?
It's not as good as you remember, but it's watchable.
Not unlike the Flintstones.
if it's 2 a.m. and you're stoned, Wacky Races goes for days.
So could you imagine why somebody would be such a Flintstones obsessive as Brian Levant is?
I can totally see why.
What is it then? Explain to me.
Generational.
Yeah, I think generational because Brian Levant, he was he's a comedy writer for TV and director for TV. He was one of the big brains behind Mork and Mindy, Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, all of those kind of shows that spun off from Happy Days and stuff. And he was kind of just around that scene. He'd made Beethoven before this, and this was his big one. He was talking to his agent, I hear they want to do Flintstones. You got to get me in there. Got to get me this gig. And I can see why he was so passionate about it, because the guy is fucking crazy passionate about it. Seeing him talk about this movie, I almost cried. Just how much how much passion this guy had and how proud he is of this film. And I think I can see why, because I think it's a classic for a reason, because one, it takes that classic sitcom family format of stuff The Honeymooners, which I think is Flintstones very clearly a remake of. Which is a classic 50s American sitcom with Jackie Gleason, that bam pow straight to the moon. Mm-hmm. Very funny shit.
The show where he consistently threatens to beat his wife.
Why I thought
it's extremely funny shit. It's great stuff. It holds up, and it's funny enough to not be problematic, I would say. And so it really takes that format and really remakes that. And then elevates it to a level for children where it's kind of just silly and goofy and has a really nice kind of, I think, world setting color palette that's just really pleasing for kids, because everything about the Flintstones is inventive when you look at it, because they have to invent everything that's around them to make it look like a Stone Age family.
It is a lot of fun. Even then, after we watched the movie, I would just watch the original intro.
Yeah.
And it's so... Even to watch that, you're yes, this is all so... It's really satisfying to the eye. You want to keep watching it. And this is like that visually. If you could rewrite... If you could overdub the plot...
Yeah.
With anything, literally anything else, except for Fred is an idiot underling who is secretly tasked by this just fucking ridiculously archetypal villain to... It's just so it's so agonizingly boring. I've watched bad movies repeatedly.
Yeah.
And that's right up in the top five memories, just as bored as three people can be.
Oh man.
Trudging through the middle of a film.
Oh yeah.
Can I make a suggestion? This, instead of being a 91-minute feature film, should have been a 3-minute Funny or Die recreation of the opening credits.
Yeah.
Same cast, same budget.
Yeah. I think if they just even cut out anything of plot and just made it a weird kind of just an experience.
Is I can compare it to the plot of The Phantom
Summer's
Menace. Where, shall I compare thee to a summer's turd?
Oh, it's God, insane. I love to do turds in summer.
Phantom Menace was a kid's movie that was about embargoes and trade federations. Yeah. And shit. This is a kids' movie that's about unionizing and corporate embezzlement.
And like compromise and marital problems and like maintaining adult friendships.
It's insane. It makes no sense. I still don't know who it's for. I think it's just for Brian Levant.
I think it is. I think it's for Brian Levant and maybe pitched at people like us now who maybe saw the movie as a kid, but now an adult. So now they're like, I want to watch a grown-up movie. But I also want it to look like a movie I liked when I was a kid.
Such a long game to play to make it in 94 and be like, I'll get him.
Give me 20 years. They'll love it. Yeah, I think because it's truly bizarre. I was reading about like the production of this film originally in the 80s. It was with another company to be made into a film. This is a Steven D'Souza script, who is the writer of Die Hard and like a bunch of classic screenplays. And the script that he originally wrote for it that is not used in this at all is equally, if not more, insane in its adult tone. It was basically a Flintstone set Grapes of Wrath, where Fred and Barney are fired and then travel across America trying to find work and live life.
Travel across Pangea.
Oh, yeah, Pangea. My mistake.
Isn't
that equal? That's maybe worse.
I think I'd maybe enjoy a road movie more.
Yeah, but it's just because the idea of it is obviously going to outstrip the reality we just lived through. Like, that does sound more appealing. But also because there's probably more opportunity for wacky characters, wacky antics.
Yeah.
If you're coming across all sorts of new people as you traverse Pangea.
Mm.
But, like, you just... Oh, it's such a waste of bedrock. It's such a waste of the set.
Yeah.
It's like everything around what the characters are saying is so cool and fun. And everything the characters are saying is like doing everything it can to just suck that out of the room.
It's just a drama. It's like the Big Chill set in Flintstones. Like, it's insane.
It feels like it should be directed by the guys that made The Naked Gun and Airplane and stuff, Zsasz.
Oh,
just because there are so many opportunities for background gags and prop gags that are wasted. There are things like McDonald's instead of McDonald's and stuff like this.
Like the one pun or attempted pun they could muster between the 20 great comedy brains in the writers' room.
It's insane. There's like three puns in this movie. If it was a Zsasz production, it would be filled with background gags.
Most confusingly of all, the film starts with a pretty... the cold open of the film, and it is a cold open.
It's freezing cold.
Yeah.
It's the freaking ice age.
It's setting up like the evil characters. It's Halle Berry and whoever she's acting against.
Kyle MacLachlan.
One of the greats.
One of the funniest cunts that's ever lived.
He actually is really fucking funny. He's in Portlandia. He's the mayor in Portlandia.
I've seen one Portlandia sketch with him in it, and it is very, very...
He's incredible. He's one of the great actors.
In Twin Peaks, he's actually great. Wasted in this fucking movie.
So it's essentially they do some... vague job of setting up the central premise of the film, which is he's gonna screw over one of his employees at
Slate Corp, which is a construction site of some kind. Yes.
And then it goes straight into real life Flintstones introduction.
Yep.
So you get all of the same beats. You get him sliding down the dinosaur tail into the car.
Saying the yabba dabbas.
Yeah, you get the feet wind up. He goes home.
Mm-hmm.
You get Dino. You get the whole thing, and they go down to the local the drive-in movie theater, and they start watching essentially to watch Tar Wars, which is
directed by Gorge Lucas.
That's right. Brilliant, actually executed pun.
Yes.
And so you go in there.
We were all pissing ourselves at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
I pissed myself, dude.
And not for the last time, Alexi.
Oh,
and then the camera pushes into the screen and you enter the world of the movie.
There's another pun there. The title logo of Universal is now Universe Shell.
Yes.
Yes.
And the world just has Pangea on it. No continents.
Yes. But it also does establish that the world is round.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which will pay off in a wonderful gag later on. So we go into the cinema screen, you know, not unlike
Buster Keaton in Young Sherlock Holmes.
In the Sherlock Holmes movie. What's it, Sherlock Jr.?
Yeah, it's classic.
That's probably around when The Simpsons were on. That kind of movie.
We enter the world of the film, and then we just watch as they drag around this fucking disaster for about 85 minutes.
Yep.
And then the movie ends, and it pulls back out.
Out of the movie screen.
Yeah, and what have the characters in the movie... been watching the same...
This is meta. Mm. This is a meta film within a film. It's almost like David Lynch Mulholland Drive, where she wakes up and the whole movie has been but a dream. That's what it is. It's exactly like that. And
I have had Mulholland Drive the last three nights, like top of my watch. It's like, I can't wait to do it. And unknowingly, you have taken that away from me.
Oh, well, I'm that's one interpretation of it. You can watch it.
It'd be a great double bill. That's what we'll say.
Mulholland Drive is perhaps one of the most impenetrable films of all time. So you can watch it and get a totally different reading than I gave. But it's basically, we're watching a movie within a movie for the whole time. So who gives a fuck? And so why would they watch this movie?
We are to believe that they're watching Tar Wars, and Tar Wars is about corporate espionage.
Tar Wars went wrong in the same way that the Phantom Menace went wrong. They got bogged down in bureaucracy.
It was a prediction of what would happen many years later.
And then, so in the reality of this, then, does that mean that Fred and Wilma and all that shit are movie stars? And they're just
I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I'd watch that.
I think it's, I think they fucked up, in all honesty. I don't think they meant it to be like that. But truly, they mucked it up big time because they just want it to look like the opening credits of the film and the closing credits of the TV series. But are we to believe that this is based on a true story, that Fred Flintstone did do all this shit and was duped?
Can you explain to me what Fred did, Alexi?
So, Fred Flintstone, famously, he's dumb. He's not one of the smartest characters in the show.
He's dense.
He's dense as a rock. Much like many of the things that populate this screen in this film. So he's famously quite dumb. There's a career opportunity happening at Slate Co. where all the workers, including people of a Neanderthal race and people of a chimpanzee orangutan race, who is played by a real orangutan.
Yeah.
And they all take a test. And to find out who would be the dumbest and the smartest. So, Mr. Kyle MacLachlan, I don't remember his name.
Something Vandercave.
Okay, let's call him Nathan Vandercave. Nathan Vandercave takes all the tests, but he does not know that Barney Rubble, Fred's best friend, to pay him back for giving them millions of little shells to pay for their
Which
adoption.
Cash.
Mm. Yeah, it's cash back in the day. It used to be shells. Mm-hmm. He pays to pay Fred back. He swaps their test out, knowing that Barney would have the highest one and Fred would have the lowest one.
Oh my God.
Then
I regret asking this question.
They take all the tests. They mark them all. They find out Fred Flintstone. How could this possibly be? He is the perfect candidate for us to be vice president.
Here is another point of confusion, because Nathan Vandercave,
a Dutchman.
Yeah. A Dutchman.
Pretty good
accent work. This is all set up in the cold open. They're looking for specifically someone who's dense, someone who won't ask any questions. And then they do this aptitude test, and they hire from the results of that. And no one gets their results back. They're just told who scored the best.
Mm.
They hire the smartest person on the workforce. Mm.
But
if you want like some crony who's not going to ask any questions about what you're doing, you would hire...
Get the orangutan.
Yeah, but exactly. Well, Fred bloody Flintstone, by the way, the results came in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it doesn't, like...
You've pointed out a plot hole.
Well, but it's not... You can
or
just,
a plot
you can,
cave.
You don't need it. You can just fix the plot hole by just... They can just hire the dumbest person. Oh, but then you lose all that conflict, that juicy conflict between
this
Barney
movie
and Fred.
Sucks. Let's say it. This is fucking horrible.
I think if you had asked me yesterday if I liked the Flintstones movie, I would say yes in my top 100 films
of
all time.
You've been saying it's in your top 100 for a long time. And as long as I've known you, you've raved to me about how this is the most beautiful movie you've ever seen.
Yes. It's gorgeous.
That's why you keep saying, oh, this is a Terry
I think maybe I'll forget that I didn't like it on this viewing and I'll still love it again, because I genuinely adore the look of this film, because it's so inventive, because the only materials they have to work with, they can't buy anything to make this film with. They have to invent everything, and they only have shell, bone, skin, rock to make shit out of. It's fascinating just to look at every little detail in this film.
I reckon it'll be so good to just get in there and walk around.
Yeah, me too. I'd love to walk around that set.
God, if I could take a stroll anywhere, it would be Bedrock.
And The film budgeted at roughly $40 million, grossed roughly $340 million.
Yeah, and three people out.
Yeah, and it's not outside of the realm of possibility that you could go to Universal or Universe Shell Studios.
Oh, that's cool.
And have a bloody waltz around the set.
Have a gay old time, perhaps.
Oh, yeah.
Did they make a world, like a Bedrock world at Universal Studios?
I don't think so. I think the closest would have been what was the Hanna-Barbera themed park near Sydney?
Oh, wasn't it a Wonderland or
something?
Yeah,
Wonderland. Yeah, that was Hanna-Barbera. We had a theme park.
That's cool.
Just as a Sydney, and the only rides they could get was Hanna-Barbera. So you just had like Scrappy Doo walking around, a giant Fred Flintstone, Dino, and stuff.
But those are all fun characters.
That's fun, but it was really just roller coasters with
in the bush
paintings of Scooby-Doo shit on it.
And it was just in the bush. They didn't do anything to make you feel like you were in another world.
Yeah, no world building. The world building in this movie is pretty good, though. I got to say, I do feel like there's scope for much potential, even when you're watching it on screen.
What is a sort of plot through line that you would see which you think would be more palatable than what we were just presenting?
Well, I think that this was made at a time when TV to film adaptations were happening. The Brady Bunch movie was around this time.
That was
as well.
Huge.
And it was huge. And then all this era of filmmaking is all really about like people selling out and not selling out. It was the grunge era, man. It was like Nirvana, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Kurt Cobain and shit like that. So it was like,
oh, man,
that's
I
what
hope
was
they
being made. Even the
funeral.
Brady Bunch movie is like a sellout movie. As
yeah,
well.
It is.
It's all like about keeping it real.
Wayne's World, a lot of stuff like that.
I don't really give a shit about seeing a kids movie be that. I just reckon it should be. They should have just stolen the plot from one of the cartoons, and it's got to be something dumb like
do a Christmas Carol or something like that.
Yeah, even that would be cool. Or Fred has to win the big bowling comp, or there's some dinosaur hunt that they are a part of. I don't know. Or there's like an ice age coming that they need to prepare for. Give me something freaking prehistoric.
Yeah, instead of modern day corporate espionage.
Some corporate bullshit.
Yeah, it's so strange. And there's so much stuff about just his marriage being like under threat with Wilma, where they keep breaking up and then they have to separate at different points. There's so much like marital family pressures that I don't think children should truly
lots
be exposed to.
Lots of mother-in-law stuff.
Yeah,
lots
mother-in-law.
Of great mother-in-law stuff.
You love sort of mother-in-law humor.
I love mother-in-law humor.
A lot of your stand-up is based around mother-in-law
jokes.
Well,
my show this year, of course, it was called Mother-in-Law? Illegal. So, and it was just hanging shit on any, you know, on former partners' mothers. And it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of laughs.
You say stuff like, oh, God, I have the mother-in-law from hell. Stuff like that.
Yeah, that's my opener.
Yeah.
You go, who here's married?
Yeah.
Go,
woo!
This guy knows what I'm talking about.
Mother-in-law from
must
hell.
Must be newlyweds, I guess. You're so excited about it. Yes. Not me.
Who here's single? Yeah. More energy.
Yeah,
you know,
see them? They're
like
happier.
That.
Better quality of life. So funny.
And also, ladies, I hear you getting upset at home. Men's mums can be a nightmare as well.
Oh, here we go. Okay. Flip on it. That's a good flip.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was sort of the sort of punch, the pathos in the last sort of 15, 20 minutes. I really bring it home.
The very end.
I get it. My mum's not perfect either. A few just witty anecdotes about sort of annoying stuff
like
my
dumb
mum's done.
Shit she's done.
Yeah. Like she washed my cricket whites with a pink t-shirt.
Are you serious?
And then what happened?
Well, I had to go to cricket with the lads all bloody pink.
Oh my gosh. You must have been bleeding. Mercilessly for something like that. Yeah.
Did you get made fun of?
Big time.
What sort of stuff did they call you?
Pinky.
Yeah,
Pink Boy.
Strawberries
and cream.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
And they push me down and they kick me in the ribs.
So
full on.
You all right?
Yeah. It's hard to talk about it, to bring it up again. Yeah.
Yeah, you had to go to hospital, hey?
Yeah.
That sucks, dude.
I mean, it's funny shit, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all worth it for the gag.
It's worth it.
Yeah, with hindsight, it was pretty funny.
But that's the sort of shit that makes you a comedian, you know what I mean? When you go through shit like that as a kid, it's like, oh, I actually am a comic, you know?
Yeah.
Tortured.
Man, we're all fucked up. Clown. Comics are all fucked up in their own way. It's so exciting to see just a group of comics get together and just share about who they are and what made them this way.
Yeah, man.
I feel like we took a turn somewhere and this went from total reboot to total WTF territory.
This is a reboot of WTF. We're going to be chatting about comedy a lot of the time. Yeah.
Who are you guys?
Who are my guys?
Yeah.
I came up with Dangerfield.
Yeah,
great.
Hey, yeah. I get no respect over here.
It's like he's in the room.
Yeah, I love him, man.
He's so funny.
He is funny.
Because he actually, the ironic thing is... he talks about how he has so much little respect, but if he were alive today, he would be probably watering at the eyes at how much respect he's got in the industry. I mean, that's funny stuff. I get the humor there.
Yeah, that's good stuff. So anyway, back to the Flintstones movie.
Should we talk about the rest of the cast? Because also, the other thing that this has on its side, apart from marvelous, a triumph of production design, is that the casting is sensational, like a most perfectly cast film ever. Obviously, John Goodman, perfect Fred Flintstone.
Most perfectly cast film ever?
Yeah, what are you going to say? Godfather's better than this? Yeah, probably. But you know, for a source material of cartoons... I would say that this is up there with like Brady Bunch era of films that are really well cast.
I can't believe you just said that.
Well, I mean, I'm making a hyperbolic statement. Obviously, I believe there's other films that have better cast than the Flintstones
man,
movie.
You just said
it. Yeah, you said it, man.
Okay, you can call me out. I'll stand by it.
You're getting roasted.
Flintstones fucking rules. Best cast ever. The only cast better than this, Flintstones 2, Viva Rock Vegas.
I want to get
Mark
to that.
Addy instead of.
Was that a second Flintstones?
Yeah, yeah. A prequel.
Oh, my fuck.
Isn't one of the Baldwins Barney in it?
Yeah.
Stephen Baldwin or something?
One of them. I don't know which one.
I'm going to look that up right
now. Okay, so anyway, let's talk about who's the cast in this. Obviously, we've got Goodman as Freddy. We got Rick as Barnos.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who plays Wilma?
Elizabeth Perkins. She is a young starlet in this movie.
She's
great. I think her and Rosie O'Donnell
as Betty
are fantastic.
Yeah. Rosie O'Donnell's great.
Rosie O'Donnell is a great Betty.
She stand out.
And Brian Levant said that if anyone were to ever challenge his reign as the number one Flintstones fan ever, it would be Rosie O'Donnell herself.
No kidding.
No shit.
She loves the Flintstones.
She loves the Flintstones.
Who also got Kyle MacLachlan as Nathan Vandercave.
Yeah, his name's actually Cliff Vandercave. So you get a couple of puns in his name.
That's pretty good. And then
oh, man, the second movie did not go well.
Oh, no. Tell us about it. Because first of all, tell me who's in it. Because I know that I've just gone through the cast of this. Tell me who the cast is.
The film stars Mark Eddy replacing John Goodman.
Now, he's most famously known from
Full Monty,
Game of Thrones, and Jack Frost, the movie starring Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton, who's he
as
in that?
A sentient snowman. He's in the band.
That sounds like a good movie.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Michael Keaton wandered so far off the rails for a while there.
Oh, yeah.
And has anyone walked back with more purpose?
It's incredible.
That is incredible.
He walked back so quickly and gracefully and walked straight into being
the turning point for me. Police chief slash manager of Bed Bath & Beyond and the other guys.
I knew he was on the way back, man.
This guy will be in two Oscar-winning films back-to-back in no time.
I maybe wouldn't have called that, but I was like, he'll be in a bunch of Judd Apatow movies for the next few years.
That great running TLC gag had a lot of laughs. Even now, I think about it, you can see me smiling. Stephen Baldwin replacing Rick Moranis.
Yeah, I knew it was a Baldwin. He's the one who is a born again Christian. And
yeah, he's a Trump guy, I think.
Trump voter.
So you get the two leads essentially being replaced.
Yeah.
Alarm bells.
Well, it's a prequel, but you got to get younger
guys.
It's
like Dumb and Dumberer.
Yeah.
Kristen Johnston replacing Elizabeth Perkins.
Oh, she's incredible. I love her.
Yvonne Humperlott from Austin Powers, Spy Who Shagged.
She's also in Third Rock from the Sun. She would have been a great Wilma in this. I think it was a missed opportunity to not get her as a Wilma in this. She's incredible.
And Jane Krakowski
from 30 Rock.
I love Jane Krakowski.
Was replacing Rosie O'Donnell.
Now, they're both two incredible comedic actors.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen Johnson and Jane Krakowski.
Oh, nowhere near as funny as Mark Addy and Stephen Baldwin.
That's insane that the leads of this movie are two unfunny people.
Yeah. And then also they've got the Great Gazoo.
We've counterbalanced it by casting two of the funniest women we can.
To play the wives.
And this is the one where they bring back the Great Gazoo.
That's right.
Who is a little alien creature that's friends with...
Do you remember who played
with
the Great Gazoo?
Jesus.
In that one?
Can I guess? If I had to guess, I'd say Martin Short.
In terms of facial structure, in the right ballpark.
Oh.
So he's white?
Martin Sheen?
Well, no, that's more in naming structure. Luddite.
Okay, let me guess. Who looks
Gilbert
like...
Gottfried.
No!
Who would have been cast in movies around
Alan Cumming.
Oh, okay. Right. She would another impish, delightful
He'd
fellow.
Be a wonderful gazoo.
And a dual role as the Great Gazoo and Mick Jagger.
Oh, that's good.
My gosh. Must be like based on Mick Jagger. From Rolling Stones.
Well done.
What would they have possibly called the Rolling Stones back then?
It was a...
How could they possibly come up with a pun for that?
It was a budget $83 million, return $59.5. Just everything about that.
Oh, so they doubled the budget of the movie.
Yeah. They doubled down.
Made two-thirds of it back.
Oh, God. Brian Levan, also the director of that film.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that stinks. No wonder I've never heard of the guy. So his career really plummeted after that, I guess.
I would say so. Unfortunately, Levant. The guy didn't make it back. He's now directing straight-to-video Scooby-Doo sequels.
Oh, no.
Curse of the Lake Monster.
Oh, no.
He used to be on top of the world.
Yeah.
And now he's down in the slums continuing to make Hanna-Barbera. Made for TV movies.
It's almost like he put all his Brontosaurus eggs in the one basket.
It must be a pretty big basket. He also did Jingle All the Way and Are We There Yet?
I love Jingle All the Way. That's one of my favorite holiday movies I watch every Christmas season. I really do.
Really? Every Christmas?
Seeing us here?
No, I really do watch it every year. I think it's hilarious.
This hyperbole. You really think it's the best Christmas movie ever made
did
in the history
I say
of
that?
Mankind? That's exactly what you said.
Is it? All right, then I got to stand by it. If that's what I said, that's what I meant.
I want to talk about Halle Berry as Miss Stone. So her character's name is Miss Stone, Sharon Stone. That's something I've been obsessed with my entire life.
Yeah.
That Sharon Stone was originally offered the role.
But then she turned it down. They didn't change the name.
Well, they didn't even offer her a role. They said, Sharon Stone, you're going to star in the Flintstones movie as yourself.
And she says, no thanks. And they go, well,
we'll
give it to the sexiest woman alive, Halle Berry. You just got demoted, Shaz.
You just got demoted, Shazza. But unfortunately, they kept the name, and I don't know why.
Well, obviously,
and
it's
I've been looking
a joke.
At it. I've been looking at it now, and like the pun doesn't work. And there is stuff now where it has been named to Rosetta Stone in some sources.
Huh? Oh, her name. What?
Her name is now Rosetta Stone. It's been changed after the fact.
Oh, really?
There's like one source where it says Rosetta Stone. Other sources say Miss Stone. Other sources say Sharon Stone.
Any way you cut it, she is a slice of honey pie.
Oh, wow. I actually started tugging on my own collar. Luckily, it wasn't something else when she came on screen.
And your neck became really long.
And he's like got a stiff neck. I've got a crick in my neck.
My eyeballs popped out of my skull. My tongue unfurled like a carpet. And I was pounding the ground with my fists. I was horny for this chick.
Oh, hang on a second. What?
Yeah, she's the sexiest woman alive to this day. I mean that.
I'm not going to argue with you, man.
Cool.
Certainly not based on the performance that I just saw her give.
Her name was Sharon, right? I swear she was called Sharon in this movie.
Was this a breakout role for Halle Berry?
Yeah, before this, she'd only really been in Jungle Fever, where she has like a small role as like a junkie. Girlfriend to Samuel L. Jackson, and then she was in The Last Boy Scout, but this is like her big breakout role.
Because 1993, you've got an audition for the Flintstones movie.
Yeah.
How hot a ticket is that? You want in so badly.
You know, Spielberg's producing it.
Spielrock.
You know, it's Universal.
Universe
Shell. You go, okay, who are the attached stars? John Goodman?
Yeah.
more like John Good Neanderthal.
Almost.
And Rick Moranis.
More like...
Rock Moranis. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. It's right there. And then you go, all right, I've got to get in on this. This is going to make me a star. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It did. It freaking did make her a star.
She won an Oscar. Not for this, but many years later.
Yeah.
Rosie O'Donnell won a Razzie for her turn.
In this movie.
Yeah, which would have hurt knowing that she was such a big Flintstones fan.
I think she was good in it. I think she was the best thing about it. Her and Rick Moranis are my two picks.
They were good. Hmm. Barney and...
Betty.
You just want to see them in their home more. I don't want to... I mean, I know that, you know...
I don't know if I do want to see them more because... Their storyline is one of the worst parts of the movie as well.
That's why I'm saying their house.
Yeah, just
all,
their house.
All you wind up seeing is like all you see is them being a burden to like these two iconic childhood characters, Fred and Wilma.
Yeah,
who are just becoming bigger and bigger assholes.
Yeah,
for like 30 minutes of the movie, all that you're watching is just the escalating tension between two people who you're meant to love, either as a child or an adult remembering their childhood.
Yeah,
become like insufferable. Assholes,
yeah, mm-hmm.
And they just pile onto their two best friends who you also remember from your childhood as being like legends
who are also going through a tough time The kid they have adopted, Bam Bam, is quite the handful. The kid's quirky, let's
say
that.
He's on the spectrum, hands down.
I mean, he's a problem child.
Yeah.
Also, The Problem Child, directed by Brian Levant.
Is it really?
I think Problem Child 2, directed by Brian Levant.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So, it's just like, it's bizarre that that's like the part of the film. It's that these guys are, there's so much about this film is people suffering.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think you guys both just tapped into what is 100% the problem with this, is that you're watching people you're supposed to love be horrible.
Yeah.
You're just watching Fred and Wilma become snobs and the other two become sad sacks.
It's quite interesting. Very similar experience watching the Grown Ups movie, Grown Ups 2, and Grown Ups where it's like...
Have you seen Grown Ups 2?
Yes, I have. Have you not? Where it's like you're watching just assholes where their characters and their characteristics aren't meant to be assholes, but it's like there's a level of obliviousness or like that sort of... The character trait, they think that the character traits necessitate the storyline moving forward or something.
Mm.
But when you're watching, because there's so much care and energy that's gone into this, when you're watching Grown Ups 2, you can tell that the movie's shit and everyone on set knows it's shit, but they're having a fuck when the cameras aren't rolling. Even when they are rolling, they're having so much fun doing it. But this looked like so much, it looked like work. Like they're trudging around trying to make something work that just doesn't work. And there's obviously visibly around them the whole time they're on set. So much effort's gone into it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just this fucking dead horse of a script.
And no one is wearing shoes as well.
Yeah.
Like, so you just tell that they're going through this shit.
I read all glass was banned on set because it was all shot in barefoot.
Yeah.
Can't even have a cold brewski.
I can't even imagine that.
Out of a glass vessel.
They have to drink out of a tinny of some kind.
Oh.
You know what it reminds me of? In tone and look is the Super Mario Brothers movie. Have either of you ever seen that? That's another iconically bad adaptation.
Mm. Who did that?
Oh, who knows? Nintendo weren't even a part of it.
Yeah.
It was just some weird production company that had the rights somehow.
Incredible.
Because they bought the rights to the cartoon or something like that. And
but also great casting. Bob Hoskins as Mario, beautiful.
And John Leguizamo as Luigi.
Perfect.
It's crazy.
I love those loopholes, which seems like it's really precious, you know, like intellectual property just by people who are like, ha ha, we've got it.
Yeah,
it's like, sucks. Please, everyone's begging you not to.
Everything that could be wrong about the Super Mario Brothers movie is wrong, down to the fact that they are not brothers in the movie.
They're not brothers?
No, and it's called Super Mario Brothers, and they're not brothers. Oh my gosh. Luigi is the adopted son of Mario.
So good.
Are you fucking kidding
me? I've seen it so many times. I've got the DVD.
It's the
same
son
thing.
Of
it's like,
Mario.
It's a gorgeous looking movie
that
you can tell everyone was having the worst time making it. And there's none of it makes sense. And it's too dense a plot for kids. And it's another one of those things where it's like, we've bought a children's property, but no child will enjoy this.
Yeah.
Who is it for?
But do you think that they gave the script out to people and they were like, this is good, because they're reading it like, wow, this has got a plot. They're reading it as an adult reading the script.
Grown-ups would be like, oh, I can see why Fred is motivated to do this, etc.
It's, Yeah, and you just you're so excited by the prospect of doing it. Think of how this is this is huge.
Yeah,
the Flintstones at the time, longest running cartoon in the history of television.
Wow,
history of mankind. I mean, they're from the Stone Age.
Sometimes I'm like, oh, when are these jokes going to stop? But then I realize they can't stop because you are addicted to the shindig, my man. Mad respect.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
They just fist bumped. It was actually quite cute.
Yeah.
Wish I was a part of it. I wasn't. Sorry, dude. No, I think you're right. I think as a cast member and a crew member, you'd be super excited about the prospect of this. But then every day it would dawn on you more and more that this is...
What are we making here?
Yeah, this is being wasted. The whole plot of the movie comes down to the invention of concrete.
Yeah.
That's the big ending of the movie, is that Fred accidentally invents concrete.
And he murdered Kyle MacLachlan with it.
And then now everything's over. It's just, look, let's just say it. This is a bad adaptation.
I think it's a...
Oh, God, you're hanging on to it.
It's, I don't think it's a bad adaptation. I think it's just misguided at points, being the script. But I think it's not a bad adaptation. I think it nails a lot of things that made the Flintstones special and connect with people in its inventiveness and its look and its design, its characterization and stuff. But I think that the script is so insane and so... I'm hesitant to say bad because it's a confident script. But it's not funny at all.
It's bad. It's a comedy movie. It's a comedy family movie.
I think it's a drama. It
fulfills neither of those obligations.
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking
So it's bad.
You're talking a lot of brontosaurus poo right now.
Roasted.
Okay. I don't know. I just have a love for this movie just because it looks so good.
It's bad.
It's a turd. It's a straight up turd.
This might help us turn a corner. This is a fun bit of trivia from the IMDb page. Mm-hmm. When Elizabeth Taylor was on the set, she played a joke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
This is funny stuff.
Three comedians. I think we're going to like this shit.
When her character was tied up, Taylor playfully looked at the director and asked, "Did he know how many men wanted her in that position?"
Oh, wow. Yes. That's awesome.
I mean, this is her final film that she ever did.
Is it really?
Yeah, this is her final film.
Yeah, iconic too.
And she said that she didn't think it would be unseemly to do a cartoon movie.
Yeah, right. So she's there, tied up. She turns to Brian Levant. She says, "Do you know how many men wanted to root me while I was tied up?" And Brian Levant probably says something like, "Yeah, heaps, I reckon. You were the sexiest woman alive."
You probably gave quite the men a wet dream when they were sleeping.
Yeah.
A lot of men inventing cements back in those days.
When's the last time you lads had a wet dream?
I have wet daydreams all the time.
Yeah.
I have wet micro sleeps.
I've yet to produce semen.
What about you, Guy? Have you had one recently?
Yeah, I had one last night about Halle Berry.
Oh, world's sexiest woman alive.
Another bit of trivia, the bowling alley sequence was almost not in the movie.
Oh my God, imagine they didn't put a bowling alley sequence in the film of the Flintstones.
Well, that was why they did. They said it was added at the last one because Fred's Twinkle Toes bowling style was such a big part of the series, they felt it couldn't be left out.
It is a bad movie. If they didn't think to put that in the fucking movie on the first run...
Brian Levant's a fucking idiot. I'm saying it. He sucks.
Last piece of trivia.
Yes.
Barney Rubble, originally offered to Danny DeVito.
Physically makes more sense to be Danny DeVito.
But he said no because he's too gruff of actor. And he personally recommended Rick Moranis.
Well, I think Danny DeVito, thank you so much for inspiring some of the greatest casting in the history of mankind. My hat's off to you, little friend.
Does
anyone have any other
call him little
anything they'd like to add? I've already put in my 2 cents or 2 shells, as it were. I think this movie sucks. I think it's a bad adaptation. And I do not want to watch Viva Rock Vegas. Anyone else?
As someone who will not be here for, I would love for you guys. The idea of watching bad movies is so appealing and fun. It's like, oh, I like watching a bad movie.
Yeah.
Then you sit down and do it. It is such trudgery. It is such hard work. Mm. And I would love for you guys to do Viva Rock Vegas.
Oh, God.
We'll do it next time you come to Sydney to hang out with
yeah,
us.
Yeah, we'll wait for you. We'll wait for you.
I've tied my own noose.
Give me a little treat for you. Oh, yeah, that's another thing. Fred almost gets lynched in the movie. Very funny stuff. Very, very funny shit. Very, very funny shit. Guy, thanks so much for joining us
thank
on this
you.
Episode of Total Reboot. Always a pleasure to have you hanging out with us on a podcast.
Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. And there's also a film that I saw you talking about online. A New Zealand comedy.
Oh, yes.
I think it's coming out in Australian cinemas like very, very soon.
I saw that also. The Breaker Upperers, which is a very, very funny New Zealand comedy written by, starring and directed by two very funny women, Madeline Sami and Jackie Van Beek. Full disclosure, friends of the titular stars. And also, I have a line in the film.
Yeah. You have an appearance in the film?
I have an appearance in the film. Wow. Like, pretty much half of the New Zealand comedy scene, they sort of filled out the peripheral characters with their friends.
Good
so,
idea.
It's very funny as a movie for anyone to watch, but you guys are probably friends with a lot of the extras.
I've seen some of the clips online and I know almost all the people that I've seen.
Which is, and that's like, I've never experienced that before. It's really fun to watch a movie and be like, those are my people.
What's your line?
I say
yabba dabba do.
That's a yabba dabba don't step on my line. I say the crayfish orgy.
Excellent.
Bon appetit.
Okay, so we're gonna get maybe that's context free, but I like that.
Bon
like
appetit.
That. It's giving me a
improvised
context.
Are you serious?
Channeling John Cleese in Monty Python.
Oh, excellent. He's so fucking piss funny.
You've actually given me a context clue. I'm not going to say just in case I'm wrong, but I think I know what your character is.
Perhaps what occupation that you hold.
I know the occupation.
The next group of movies that we're going to be doing over the next couple of weeks on the podcast, it's something that we wanted to do since we started this project, something we've been super excited about doing and also nervous about. Three movies are on the bill. The first being an all-time classic film. The second being an underappreciated, undervalued follow-up to that film, a sequel made many years later. And finally, a shot-for-shot insane remake of a classic. We're going to be talking about Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho next week and also the underappreciated Psycho 2. The week after that, of course, we'll be talking about Gus Van Sant's shot-for-shot remake of Psycho, made in the 90s, a little film with a little thing we like to call the VVF, the Vince Vaughn factor.
Guy, thank you so much for joining us. Do you have anything that you'd love to direct the listeners towards?
Absolutely. I have recently recorded I've banked a whole season of a new podcast that Tim Batt and I, we've got all of them in the can. We just haven't released it yet. It might be out when this comes out. Called Overlooked and Undercooked, and actually Cam James himself appears on one of the episodes.
I am, and it was so much fun, and it was as torturous as watching the Flintstones, but only a third of the length.
Yeah.
What did you watch for this podcast?
So it's a critical analysis of Rob Schneider's self-funded, written, directed, produced, and starring attempt to shake up the television business model. It's a semi-autobiographical show called Real Rob. Mm-hmm. And he made 8 episodes in the first season, sold it or paid Netflix to put it on their platform.
Yep.
And it's the 8 episodes of the first season.
Oh, good Lord.
And it is honestly one of the most misguided attempts at creating any form of media I've come across.
I've seen the first few episodes of that show and I cannot wait to listen to what you guys say about it.
Oh, it's incredible. It was so funny.
I was obsessed with it for a minute because it just like the attempt of him to self-finance it is so upsetting, but then also seeing him perform stand up to clearly no audience is just like, oh my god, he saw Louis last week and had to do something about it.
It is devastating.
Oh god.
Where can people find you, Guy?
At Guy_Mont on Twitter and Instagram. And then I think my Facebook is just Guy Montgomery, but you probably don't care about that.
No, we shall look at your Facebook.
Right on.
we promise to put that in an episode description.
Great.
Alexi and I also have Twitter and Instagram. I'm at I am Cameron James on both, and you are
at This is Alexi on both. Also, you can talk to us on Total Reboot Pod on Twitter and on Facebook, Total Reboot Movie Podcast. And Is there anything else that we got to say?
Give us 5 stars on iTunes. And while you're there, why don't you recommend a movie that you'd like to see rebooted? And Alexi and I will record an episode where we hypothesize what that reboot will be.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine your hero, Kurt Cobain, asking for suggestions for his next album?
He'd be like, hey, if anyone has any suggestions for the new Nirvana album, write them on a piece of paper, roll it up real tight, and stick it up your ass.
That's a perfect impression, Cameron. Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love the guy.
Can you say goodbye to the listeners as Kurt Cobain?
Smell you later, shitheads.
Wait,